Ooh, what's up, internet? My name's Nerdy.
And I'm Clarus.
And that's Rob, and that's Brian, and that's Robin.
We're not doing this.
You can't trust us to do it. Yeah.
We're not allowed to introduce ourselves anymore.
I don't know.
This is an autocracy.
For those I am watching the DM. Us and are like, why is it so tense? It's because we just left off with that.
For those of you who don't know, no Dragonlance this week, but I thought, well, every other D&D thing I follow does like fireside chats as an episode on the podcast feed, and so I was like, well, let's just do that for our week off. So there is no Dragonlance this Saturday, sorry about that. We are currently recovering from a very fun trip, hopefully, to Denver, where we didn't die in an avalanche.
Yeah, ideally.
And so we're just going to take this week off. Super Bowl's tomorrow. We're going to have a party. It's going to be fun. But we'll be back next week with more of the show, where we will get to the cliffhanger that we left the cast on. But we're just going to do a quick, like, a little hang sesh, a little learn about each other.
Hell yeah.
Cool.
And we're going to start. We offered, like, hey, ask us questions. Always leave questions in the roleplay. You never know when we might do another one of these episodes. So always leave questions in there because we'll answer them.
Constant vigilance.
Owen Avs asks, my question for the Dragonlance chat, how did you settle on Dragonlance? Mm. We didn't settle. We traded up, okay?
Thanks, writers.
If you know anything about you, you know that I don't settle. I bat out of my league. That's my wife.
It was a compliment.
They're going to be running Ghost of Saltmarsh soon.
I don't trust it.
They're curious how we landed on Dragonlance in particular.
It was Mad-Eye Moody. That's what it was. Sorry.
We're like recording this.
Oh, sorry. Do you want to start over?
No, you're just having a separate conversation.
Yeah.
What's going on over there?
I said constant vigilance, and we were like, oh, that's like, probably something. And I was like, no, I know it's from something. It's on the tip of my tongue. And then I was in the middle of Googling it, but I actually didn't finish Googling it. It came to my brain without finishing Googling
It's actually really important. So the question of why Dragonlance?
So why Dragonlance is the question.
I think first we looked at how long modules were.
So the original plan for this was I wanted to create a show called Module Mondays, which was going to be like 3-month module explorations, and we would have a rotating cast, and we would rotate through modules.
Yeah.
So prior to this, hi, I'm Nerdy, I'm the DM. So I have never done a official D&D world thing before. And Clara's hadn't either. And so we've only ever done homebrew. And so the idea was, oh, we'll do like official D&D content for the first time. How long could a module be, right? Like 10, 12 sessions. Because I just didn't know. I'd never cracked one open. And so I Googled, I looked up like a channel, and they were like, oh yeah, it took us like 54 sessions to get through this. And I was like, oh, that's a year. That's a year of our life. So Module Monday became, Module Monday is going to be one campaign.
Yeah.
And then I reached out, I wanted it to be in person in our basement. Because we did Roleplay Relay last year in person, and I was like, that was amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do digitally. We're going to do some digital stuff this year. I can't talk about it too much, but we're doing a digital Star Wars show for May the 4th that I'm very excited about. It's going to be a 2-part May the 4th, May the 6th, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Everyone, fingers crossed. I want to do it. I have a great cast lined up. We just, you know, we're figuring stuff out. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I want this to be in person, though, if we're going to do it every week. Who's available on Monday nights? And everyone was kind of like, no. We live technically outside of like center Toronto.
Yeah.
And so
we're like 40 minutes from the city.
And during rush hour on Monday nights, before the stream on Monday nights, it was just going to be a nightmare. No one was going to be able to make it. And so we were trying to figure out how we're going to do it. And so we're like, well, we'll do it on Saturdays for members and then it'll go public on Mondays. And then that didn't make sense because then like, I don't know. It just felt very gatekeepy, and it was going to be a lot of work to edit it that I didn't know that I would have time for every week.
Yeah.
And so we're like, well, we'll just do it on Saturdays. We'll cut the Module Monday part because we already have the Roleplay Relay brand under Nerdy Nightly. Yeah. It didn't need to be Module Monday under Roleplay Relay under
so much alliteration. Yeah.
Can you tell I have an obsession with alliteration? Yeah. It's a thing. And so that was kind of the road to getting to, we're going to do a year-long campaign. And when we started to look at modules, we already owned the book for Dragonlance.
You'd like picked it up just on a whim almost.
Yeah. And,
it was between this one and the one with the cute little owl.
This or Humblewood?
Humblewood.
We were also thinking of doing...
Love Humblewood.
Good to know.
Well, and the reason we didn't end up with Humblewood was because I know Dragonlance being in normal D&D, I was like, we here's what happened. It was the beginning of December, and I was like, well, I want to launch this in January because I'm an insane person who doesn't want to take the time to, you know, build it up, produce a trailer, stuff like that. I just want to start it. And I was like, I don't know that I have time to learn everything I would need to know as the DM of Humblewood in the next 3 weeks with Christmas. But I felt like I could do it for this because it's a little bit closer to stuff I already know. And so that's literally the reason we ended up with Dragonlance, was we already owned the book, and I'm saving Humblewood for when I can take the time to really like dive in and know Humblewood. But I do eventually want to play a Humblewood campaign because those owls are fucking cute.
It's my whole aesthetic is woodland creatures being fantasy warriors.
I love it.
I'm obsessed with it.
I used to read a book about warrior cats, so I understand.
Is it called Warrior Cats?
Yeah. No,
it's called Warriors.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It's like 40 books long, right?
Have you read the Redwall series?
Actually, no, I haven't, but I am familiar with it. No, I'm pretty sure at this point Warriors is like maybe 100 books at least, and now there's like a polar bear one too, I think. I don't know.
Cool. I would read the shit out of that. Yeah. You know I love my polar bears.
Yeah.
I
actually wish we did do Humblewood, because I have a character, his name's Jericho, he's a ferret rogue that I would love to bring back.
You've done Humblewood before?
It was a homebrew that was very similar to Humblewood.
Yeah, so the plan now is I think we're going to try and do Humblewood in 2025. And like we're going to make Dragonlance 2024 probably. This will probably go till at least to get through the module part, which who knows if we're starting next week, the module might be over. we might start the Humblewood campaign in 2 weeks if everybody dies.
No, but you need more time to read it. So
well, we'll see.
No, I like Harvest.
I know, but if you all die, I don't know that we're going to re-roll a full suite of characters and go back. I don't know how we would get back to this point, right?
Yeah.
We can live through this. I have truly no doubt we can live through this. But the case is, when we get away, do we circle back round, or do we just go, let's get the fuck back to Vogler?
So let's talk about the campaign. So that's how we ended up with Dragonlance. I was excited. One of the things that drew me in was the concept of the adventurers having to participate in larger battles where they can't be a part of everything. Because I think in D&D, oftentimes it's impossible for adventurers to be a part of a real battle, and everyone tries to do their own siege mechanics. I think Crown of Candy came close. I really liked the final siege from that. Mm-hmm. But even that, it feels weird for you to be like, and then my platoon of soldiers all cast Gust of Wind together. You know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff is always... D&D just isn't built for it, right? There's not really the, like... there's aren't mechanics for groups of soldiers fighting together. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of the fray and what WotC created for this module I thought was really fun and smart, and it was something I wanted to explore. I've really enjoyed the fray in the Battle of High Hill.
That was really fun.
It's like simplistic enough that it doesn't distract or detract from what's happening during the regular turns. Adds like a little bit of extra, which I think is nice, because that's I think what the hard thing about siege mechanics is, it feels like it kind of almost derails everything else in a way, whereas this is just like a little bit of flavor.
And then so then I was like, hey babe, do you want to do this? And you said yes immediately, and then like, reached out to be like, we have like a Discord of like content creators who do TTRPG stuff, and we're like, who's available to do this in person? And everyone was like, I can do it if it's online. And we were like, no, we want this one to be in person. And so exactly two people said that they were available to do this in person each week, and it was these two idiots.
And that's why we're chosen.
We're special.
Yeah, we definitely wanted anyone else, but we accepted
you vocalize it
luck
every
was,
week.
It was not a skill issue, luck it was availability.
I was available.
Well, I was grateful. I was grateful when you guys were available, just because obviously, like, with Roleplay Relay 1, I've DM'd for Claris and Rob for 90-ish hours. And so that familiarity was great. And then Brian, thankfully, we got to do a couple of one-shots together with Roleplay Relay 2 and casting... No, which one were you in? You were in...
the chilly,
Creep Freeze.
Creep Freeze, that's it.
That was a bad... that was bad for... I'm sorry. I have to apologize for that one-shot.
That was a great one-shot.
I made it up as it went, and there's a point in the middle of that where it straight up... I was like,
we got back onto it. There was a spider mommy.
We figured it out. Yeah. There was a hot spider mommy.
Sleeping with Santa Claus.
Oh.
Wow.
We got there.
We ended on another continent than when we began, and we were fucked.
There was so much going on to get Roleplay Relay 2 ready that I just did zero prep. And it showed.
it was
but
fun.
We got through it.
I mean, yeah, we had fun, so.
Yeah.
But then Relay 2, we made like 11 grand for charity. So like, I was like, you know what? Worth it.
Balanced yeah, out.
It was a tech stream and we figured out the tech. and so that's how you guys came on.
Yeah.
And then Robin was going to be our first guest for the initial Vogler arc.
Guest.
And then now isn't. So
oopsie.
You were just happen to be available on Saturdays.
Yeah, and we had spoken one time, and then it's like, hey, do you want to join the... No, but then it was... Because it's, like, different. Like, me joining is very different. It's like, none of us knew each other.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was like, oh, hey, you do D&D stuff, right? I know, right?
Well, and like, we do D&D stuff.
It's like, I do.
Our only conversation was rather intoxicated. Which keeps happening.
Do all of your situations happen like this? This is not the first time.
Because Jillian on Relay 1, we had only met... drunk in DC at Katsucon at the S-Class party.
Yep. And it happened during the charity one, too. There was another player that it was like, we met once.
Was it Fariha?
Fariha. Yeah. Fariha and I, so Fariha,
drunk.
Fariha okay, and so I met on a flight to Vegas together.
That's what I mean.
We sat beside each other.
I love that. Yeah. Well, that's so cool.
And I always introduce myself to like the people beside me because I feel like it makes it easier when like one of you has to get up and pee if you've like talked once.
Yeah.
And so I like introduced myself to Fariha and she was wearing this dope Avatar shirt, like The Last Airbender. And we talked for like 5 straight hours on the flight, got off the flight, shared an Uber to the strip. And I was like, we have to.
It's like another 99.
Yeah, I was like, I'm doing this like TTRPG thing in a month. Will you come do it? She's like, yeah, let's fucking go. Yes. And now she's like one of my favorite people.
That's so sick.
Yeah.
I fucking love that. That's dope.
Yeah, so I think that like I meet people once and I'm like, play Dungeons and Dragons with me, please.
Pretty much,
I am begging. It's the only thing I want to do.
Because I don't, all I do TTRPG stuff like, I think this month I'm in like 9 different games.
Jesus Christ.
Wow.
And I know.
That's it?
I know, right? Pathetic. Wimp. Those are rookie numbers. But they're all online. So when you were like, do you want to do it in person? I was like, I would love to.
I would kill a person.
Yeah,
and then we had our call and I was pretty nervous for it, but then we talked about Doctor Who for the first like 40 minutes, and I was like, yeah, this is sick, actually.
You're like,
all right. I'm super in, actually.
I love that. Like, I think business calls, if you try and talk business first, it's so hard.
Yeah.
It's especially in content creation, where you're like...
It's all about a vibe as well. Not just like, if you're in like a business call with someone who you're looking to hire, it's like, these are the skills. But like, for something like this, it matters who they are as a person.
Yeah.
Well, especially with what we do... I mean, I know that the two of you aren't, you know, don't do the like full-time content as much, but for us, like our brand is so vital to everything that we do and who we affiliate with really, like, especially for a long-term project like this is, there's a lot of risk there, right? Like if you go onto a channel now who has values that your community doesn't appreciate, it can spiral into a situation that like, can be so detrimental to your whole
Doctor Who is like a great like what's the thing where you're like almost testing out the waters because there's a lot of like controversy there in certain areas and you can be like, all right, we're gonna talk about Doctor Who and see how you feel about like these kinds of things to suss out what kind of person they are. Like,
well, especially coming out of the Christmas specials this year with the trans stuff and the first Black Doctor. And like, there's some
and
people
so
that you have conversations
like,
online.
And you'd be like, oh, fuck that. They went woke. We'd be like, well.
Oops, Daisy. I made a mistake.
Yeah.
It's happened to us before where like I don't want to name names because I don't want to like shit on anybody. But like we've collaborated with people in the past and they've either used language on our streams that I'm like, whoa, like that's really not okay.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like sexually assaulted our friends or like we've kind of been through it a little bit in the people that have been around us. And it's weird now, especially because, you know, like we produce this stuff and we've gotten to the point where we can start paying people and, you know, we pay all of you guys. We have Brandon, our editor, who we pay. We have Victoria, who we pay for social media stuff. Like we're starting to be a boss. Like where, you know, we have employees, freelance mostly, but, that also means that we fire people. And like with Relay 2, like there were like 2 people that we had to like be like, hey, we heard some shit about you, can't have you on the show. And like that's it's an uncomfortable position to be in, to be like, hey,
because it's also because, you know, not only are you like a boss in, you know, situations and whatever, but you also like are like representing a community of people. And then it's like, mm-hmm. you know, you don't know the rabbit hole that you're going to allow people to fall down that is going to be detrimental to many people. So it's like, you, it's like, hey, listen,
we can't,
like, I don't want to make things with you anymore because you are falling down a space that will make some members of my audience also fall down into. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that is just like bad.
Yeah.
Please no.
Yeah.
But Dungeons and Dragons is cool.
It is. So we have our characters. You guys play, Rob plays Caligero Moonfire, the sorcerer, the lunar sorcerer. We have Bannon Leywind, who is a Kender from the world of Kryn. Harvest, played by Claris Polaris.
That's me.
It's your boy. And we have Teller. I'm sure that's his real name, played by Robin. Other than me telling you that I would like to have the subclasses and the society, to be fully transparent with the audience, when we started doing Dragonlance and I read through the book, and the book just has the Kender race, it has the subclasses of the Knights of Salamnia and or the Lunar Sorcerer. Yeah, yeah. I kind of reached out to our three original cast members, and I was like, hey guys, like, I would really love, if we're going to do the module, if we could have all of the things from the module represented in the characters, right? And so, Brian, you chose to be the Kender race, which is a race that exists in Dragonlance. Rob took the Lunar Sorcerer subclass in the Mages of High Sorcery mm-hmm. so that we could get that story stuff in. And then Claris is a member of the Knights of Salamnia. Mm-hmm. And so what was it like creating characters within the constraints of me asking you to bring in certain elements from the book? Kind of not prescribed, but recommended.
Is that,
that's a question for the three of you. Because Teller, you didn't really. You were. I was like, well, do whatever you want. But.
Yeah. I loved it, actually, being prescribed a bit of a structure, because normally when I jump into a D&D character, I kind of like, it's fuck around and find out for a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And then I actually. You pointed this out, actually, after being in a campaign with me for a year and a half, and I actually took it as a compliment, because it was formed as a compliment, is I justify what my character sheet, spells, chart, attacks, everything looks like in the moment and because of the character's background or roleplay mm-hmm. based. Mm-hmm. So I find a way to justify why I'm having this spell or why I'm doing it or anything like that. So having that guideline at the beginning was actually super helpful for me mm-hmm. because it helped me craft, like, for example, part of the module says, did you encounter the moon somehow? Were you touched by the moon? And I was like, well, how fucking cool would it be if the moon exploded and is now embedded in my system and I am Tony Stark?
A chunk of the moon.
A chunk of the moon.
The red moon
the
is still rising.
Exactly. The red moon rises this night. So I actually, to answer the question of like, how was it with the guidance? I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I actually like, I kind of hit my stride when I'm vamping off of a collective versus trying to drill and lead and guide.
On that note, just to add to that, I think it was interesting that it forced the three of you guys to talk about your character creation before you had created anything.
Yes.
Because I didn't say, like, you're the sorcerer, you're the kind of... I was like, these are the three things that I want to appear. You guys choose who does what.
Yeah.
And so that kind of forced you to... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so we had two calls about it, and we're like, who wants to do this and why?
Yeah.
And having something as simple as you have white moon, red moon, black moon, and what's associated with it, and what your... kind of your core belief system that is correlated with that influence is really, really cool. But me being me, I was like, I'm indecisive, red moon balance. I was like, I don't know. And I think that's actually really cool also to discover with a character, because he was so rebellious to his father, but inspired by his mother that said, fuck the system. Like, when she'll learn a little bit later, and that's not really a spoiler. It's just more so he himself was conflicted. And so the moon that represents balance chose him. So it's so cool to be guided by that. And so building a character around that, I was like, I am so game. And I was actually very happy that you're like, choose. These are your choices. It actually helped me a lot. So I think... and I'm like a new-ish D&D player. I had this homebrew campaign that lasted a year and a half too, but that was the extent of my, outside of an occasional one-shot or anything like that.
I mean, so, Roleplay Relay was a very long one-shot.
No, and Roleplay Relay too, and like,
that was not a one-shot.
That was not a one-shot.
It was 173 straight hours.
It was a single session.
Yeah.
It was a one-shot.
It was a 183-hour one-shot.
Yeah, and so...
73.
And so,
73. Sorry, let's not add 10 more hours to that bullshit.
Sorry, you're right.
Comparatively to the community, I still feel green when it comes to D&D and... TTRPGs.
Having said that, even finishing one campaign, I think, puts you ahead of most people.
True, yeah,
I know a lot of people are like, yeah, I've played like the first three sessions of like 20 campaigns.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, and having this weird like middle ground of I've played and I've also got so much to learn. Mm-hmm. I think having the module foundation and just recommend it to any even new players, I think it's a great entry point. I think it's fantastic. So I love this, and now that is my answer. Yeah, pop that, bitch! No,
it's interesting that you say that, like, you would recommend the module. I don't recommend this module for a new DM.
I didn't say this module.
But I think for players it's fine. I think for players it's fun. I think that, like, the immediate direction of everything is really easy because you can't run off and do a lot right now because you're kind of surrounded by an army.
Yeah.
You're almost trapped into the plot.
They're trapped with us.
Sure. Says the 5,000 exploding draconic monstrosities.
I thought you were going to say, says the sorcerer with 21 health.
That too. You have 21 health?
Yeah.
That's funny. Derrit is a level lower than you, and he has more health than you.
He's literally meant to fight. He's a squire. He's beefy. Get out of here.
But this is a weird module. I think if you've never DM'd before, there's some weird shit in it.
Fair.
How are you feeling about Bannon right now?
I mean, Bannon's great. Is that the question, or is it the same question you give Rob?
Talk about what you want to talk about. I'm just curious. I'm curious about your thoughts, Brian.
So, I mean, when it comes to character creation, normally, I really get into backstory stuff and things that I think are interesting to, you know. But things that are interesting to explore through the character. Yeah. And in a weird therapy way, things that I want to explore about myself through this character.
D&D's not therapy. Sorry, keep going.
It can be.
I'm just kidding.
It can be therapeutic.
I'm a licensed therapist, so this is
therapy. That's a lie. For legal reasons, you cannot lie about being a certified medical practitioner.
I have a degree in musical theater. That's the same thing as a psychology degree.
That's true.
Fair.
But it's kind of something that you said that I find really interesting is like...
Everything?
Yes.
That I said?
The character, you know... I think the best characters always have to have an element of yourself. Like you were talking about this indecisiveness of yourself that then led you to things with Caligaro.
Absolutely.
And Bannon, as a character, is sort of this version of me that I want to do more of. Like this sort of like, he's always sort of happier and always looking on the bright side, always looking to give the benefit of the doubt, and always looking to like help and compliment people, which, you know, I sometimes have like this like, I don't want to do it because I'm socially anxious.
Mm-hmm.
of all people.
I was going to say, interesting.
So I really like creating Bannon in that sense. Though in the sense of the module, and we talked about this the other day, I really wanted to also pare it down backstory-wise. I wanted something that was non-impactful on the world because I'm very used to having... you know, working in homebrews where I can create something that is very impactful, like whole organizations.
When you're I want something that's not impactful. And I was like, you are the first champion of a god in 350 years.
But that's part of the module. Like, that's not something that we've created in a sense.
The gods are coming back. Yeah. That is definitely part of it. I think the way that we're playing it is that I'm definitely going to play that's more special than I think the module does.
Mm.
Just because I think it's more interesting. One of the things I learned from Baldur's Gate 3 is like just let all the characters be main characters, right? Yeah. And I think that I think there's a hesitancy sometimes in D&D that players are like, oh, I don't want to have like main character syndrome. And it's like, well, but then why are you here? Like, what are we doing? If you're not the main character, why are you sitting at the table?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's more about making sure that like the main characterness is balanced, which is why, other than Teller, because you came in later, we have like some work to do to figure out how we're gonna like main character you up.
Mm-hmm.
There's stuff going on behind the scenes for all three of your characters that you guys don't know about yet, because you are the main characters of the story, and what is going to play out is going to affect the three of you more than regular people, because if not, like.
Yeah.
Why are we sitting here for 4 hours every Saturday doing this, right?
I think people also mistake like supportive tactics to not being a main character. Like if I'm, and once again, like you took such a support healing way, whatever, as like the support character. I'm like, no, but that's still main character, and here you are. but yeah, so and it's funny because that reflects in the homebrew that we did is I actually did not feel like a main character because he came later and then he was very much a healer, very much a supportive. And I'm just saying no, but once again, we all. Are the main characters. So I'm just doubling down on that. Well, but continue with the...
I think it's interesting you bring that up, because, like, yeah, sure, at first, but then towards the end, you became very, very main character.
Is this the one where you were, like, a fallen... god angel thing.
I won.
The end of that campaign got weird.
I worked for a shitty god.
Oh, okay.
I had a falling out religiously. Tempest cleric that like drew the power from the evil god, thus switched over, and then eventually created my journey to going from a resentful fuck the gods to actually dying and becoming a celestial.
Becoming a god.
Yeah. Similar to like
literally
the whole...
dying in my arms.
Yeah, I wasn't the main character at all. I just went through like a whole arc and became a god.
But normal life. But that's also pedestrian. that's also my absolute, since you're like my social anxiety, my crippling imposter syndrome. I guarantee coming to anything, still being asked to come back, even if I was just available. I made myself available. What's that say about the rest of you guys? But
you also have a car, which
Got the people in Toronto, I have a car.
There's a reason we're moving to LA. Everybody has a car, and I don't have to pick people up from the mall.
There you go. Yeah.
Nerds.
Yeah. I think it's fun to do this to also challenge parts of yourself that you want to grow as a person as well too. So I like that. So this definitely challenged my acceptance for wanting to be invited to a collective. I think it was great.
Mm-hmm.
You were when you're like, I'm socially anxious, and then you have Bannon that speaks first and takes leads. Like, if you notice, he's like, what do? You're like, and I'm like, Bannon's taking charge, and I love that about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know? I have a tendency to always play like darker characters, like that characters that have like a bit more of like a
brooding
roughness.
Gay mystery.
brooding gay mystery.
To get back to the original point, like, I'm used to like having, you know, entire swaths of land destroyed because of my backstory, like uninhabitable, or a whole fucking spy organization that like interacts with the world at various intervals through the backstory. So I really wanted to make something that was non-invasive in that way. Ban's story.
So it's only his world that's been destroyed that gets in here.
Yeah. And everything else works within this world. So I really thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
I will say candidly, I mean, I think I'm very privileged to have spent most of my time playing homebrews. Not everybody knows people who are just going to make a fucking world
and obsess over it.
Obsess over it in the sense that it takes. Like, to really make a flushed out world homebrew, it requires countless hours. And I throw all of the kudos, congratulations, and the admiration towards people who will do that, yourself included, because you've made the entire world of
Felrosia.
Yup.
What did you say?
I know what you said.
Don't worry.
What did you say?
Nothing. They're just very similar words.
Names.
What?
The Felrosia. Don't worry about it.
What did you say, though?
I said Fenrisha.
What's Fenrisha?
It's another campaign.
There's a world that we played in as well.
Oh, I didn't know
it was
that.
Just funny because they are the cadence of them, the letters of them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I didn't play in that campaign, so I didn't know that.
I know.
I wish you told me that, and I wouldn't have done it. I could have changed the fucking name.
Absolutely not.
I'll call it Tal Doris or something.
Very original. I love that.
That's very good.
So playing in a one-shot now, also my first experience with something like this, is interesting because I always kind of like thought that it would be very railroady. And I think
the book is.
And I think in many ways that's because you're not railroading.
Our GM's not railroading.
I mean, we've kept most of the beats. But whatever.
It would have been funny if like you were like, and the squire comes back and says, guys, go left. And you know what I mean? Like, you had the opportunity to railroad it.
I mean, I don't know how much I want to reveal. Basically, like,
don't reveal it.
I haven't changed. Stuff that's already happened. Like, because like getting to the Battle of High Hill is a little bit railroady in that it's presented to you. But the way the book presents the Battle of High Hill, I think, is really strong, where it's like, hey, like, Ispin wants you to do this. He's your friend. It's like this Trimar tradition. Gorgonis attacks. The things that I change is that, like, I introduce Gorgonis to you guys before, because he just, like, comes... In the book, he just is like... And then a half-ogre who's... Cudgel's second in command attacks.
Holy shit.
I was like, well, it's weird if they've never met this character for him to just attack them in the middle of this battle.
Yeah.
And like, how would they know that he's Gorgonis' second in command? Like,
we wouldn't feel the betrayal, actually.
Yeah.
Because
you're like, wait, what do you mean a half ogre is attacking us?
Yeah.
So like, I introduced him earlier, And then there's a bunch of other stuff I want to introduce sooner that's like from like chapter five of the module that I'm like, that's way too late. Oh,
don't stop doing that. Cause that was great. The Gorgonis entire encounter.
This Martin Rootbill, the druid I created.
Yeah.
Because I accidentally said that someone healed Gorgonis in the town center. And I was like, wait, there are so few druids. It is a notable thing that there's a druid. So now I have, like, that
make
was...
A cannon, make a cannon.
I, like, well, I actually said cleric. And in that moment, I was like, wait, no, it's not a cleric. It's a druid because clerics don't exist.
And then
in my head, while you guys were talking about the next bit, I was sitting there like, fuck, I have to create... This druid has to be a person now because there's so few druids.
And that's so interesting because he's like a character that we're hunting now.
Well, now he's a huge... He has a character sheet. Because I was like, well, fuck, like if they fight Martin, he has a whole thing.
He got promoted real fast from non-existent to main character.
Literally the lead antagonist.
The closest thing you guys have to an antagonist now, really, is Martin. So that was wild. And that's so fun. That's what I love about D&D. It happens so much in Roleplay Relay, right? Where it's like, oh God, fuck, I said that. My biggest regret with Relay 1 is Matt created this idea that there is a prison in the Bugbear Empire where the bards who are singing, because you got the night shift went to a concert, which was a bugbear band of anti-Bugbear Empire like political musicians.
Like Rise Against,
who are like the Beatles, but like making a political statement about not. Yeah, and so they got arrested, and so we were gonna have a whole 12-hour session that was gonna be one of the, you know, because we kind of blocked it out in 12-hour sessions that whole week, and we were gonna have the party have to break into the Bugbear prison to rescue the Bugbear band. And all the other political prisoner musicians.
But you thought we had an extra.
But then I walked in one day, I was like, we have three. No, I thought we had a day.
Yeah.
I walked in on night shift at the end of the thing. I was like, so we have 3 days left. And I think it was Turkules who was like, we have two.
Yeah.
And Matt and I were looking at each other like, no, we've been talking about the head off about 3 more days. They're like, there's only 4 more shifts.
Yeah.
And Matt and I were like, oh no.
That's
like,
rough.
We have to like. We had to cut a bunch of stuff, and cutting the Bugbear prison was like the saddest cut of that for me, because I was like, damn it, like
it's a cool
there's
idea.
Just no time to get to it.
I was
so excited.
I'm sorry.
Like you said, Roleplay Relay was like, shit, I said that, so I had to make it work. For me, it was 12 hours of not remembering anything, so I was like, shit, I said that? What did my character say 12 hours ago?
What did the other
exactly. What the fuck did Torque say now? Whiskey dick.
You were so upset about that.
Yeah,
you wouldn't have said that, Torque.
And we were all so sleep deprived.
He might have.
You're like, oh, I had tea. Right, I have to go have diarrhea now.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I forgot. I need to shit my pants, and I hate tea.
Well, you know, he did have to pass a kidney stone, so we can't blame Torque for too much that week.
That's true.
Because he passed a kidney stone and came back and played 12 hours later.
Yeah.
What a hero, Torque. You're a hero.
Yeah, Clarus, you created Harvest for this. What's fun is Harvest is the one that, like, there's so much we can't talk about.
But yet.
Because you're at the beginning of exploring something that you don't know, and you've kind of...
Yeah, some stuff, like, I genuinely don't know.
Yeah. There's a lot of...
Like how to roll.
Harvest.
Yes. Like how to roll.
And Harvest's backstory is a mystery to Harvest, so...
That's a 3. Yeah. Right. Just checking.
She's consistent.
Just checking.
What was it like creating a character where you intentionally wanted to create a character that you could meet as the campaign went on?
Well, I think we talked about the moons. That was like one of the first things that we talked about.
Yeah.
And becoming astrology girly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's we were it. Like, what if we came up with like a whole astrology thing for this world? And like, that seems like a lot of work. I'm still down, but it's, I don't think that'll happen.
I can't imagine Harvest as an astrology girly.
No, I can't either.
Just gonna drive and say,
I can't imagine her memorizing things.
Definitely not.
Like, she knows ways to kill.
Well, also, yes, Harvest is very bad at public speaking, and I feel like you have to be, like, able to, like, talk people's ear off to be an astrology girl.
I imagine lycanthropes are astrology girlies. Like, they have to be for their own sake.
Day of the month, I know I'm gonna be really moody, and also that if I take risks that my rewards will reap tenfold. Like,
I think they're already so dependent on the cycle of the moon that... Because this is my problem with astrology, right? Is I don't want anyone to tell me that anything about myself is predestined or predescribed by something.
Yeah.
And so I think that for if you already had something related to the stars that was such an impact on your life every month and did predetermine some things about you, I think that you would like almost have a more aggressive kind of rebuke of anything else from the fucking sky telling me how I'm going to behave.
That's, like, yeah, I'd be one or the other, like extreme opposites, I think.
Yeah.
That is interesting. Do we think our characters would be astrology people? I think Teller would be an astrologer.
Teller, maybe.
Oh my god.
Just because it's all like
stories,
fancifuls, and stories, and it's like it's all fate, and it's interesting.
You just pull that thing out of a hat, and it's like, ah, yes, today, this is your fortune, basically.
Yeah,
like, I don't. Here's the thing. I think that in this world, no. Because I think that everyone would be so... Well, actually, no, the gods have been gone.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's weird. Yeah. I think that I could see astrology having risen up after the gods left. Mm-hmm. But once the gods are back, there's enough people that can just talk to the gods to find out what today is going to be. Like, you can wheel and woe.
Yeah.
Who needs astrology when you can ask a literal god how something's going to go?
Yeah.
That's true, but then it's... You know, kind of switching the conversation slightly. I'm not wearing my glasses. I almost adjusted my glasses.
I used to do that until LASIK.
I used to poke myself in that eye all the time. Yeah.
Like, the relationship between belief and faith and astrology, I feel, are so interwoven that I believe that the gods coming back, there are faces of the gods in the stars that people have made through, you know, culture and time and stuff. Mm-hmm. I believe that there would be like a relationship between lunar.
I was gonna say the mages of high sorcery, like all of them are probably like my dad.
It's like big, like, astrology girly.
Looks to it almost
for sure.
Looks to it as law, right? Like it's just part of
You wake up in the morning and you can pick what your moon cycle is.
Yeah.
It's like, is that not just being like, my stars are saying that I'm going to have this rough day.
Yeah.
Therefore, you
gain sickness, like,
the ability. Yeah, exactly, right?
Wow, the moon did it.
I love the idea that
interesting conversation.
Like, members of your order can, like, set off their period. If they're like, I need to do this once a month, and these 4 days are convenient. So this month, it's going to be these 4 days.
How wonderful.
I can pick and choose.
I do think, though, like, I find what you said really, really interesting, because, like, you know, if I can look up at the stars and try and like find meaning there, but I can also just go to a temple and call up a god and say, hey, what's up, you, like, how am I doing today? And they're just like, well, you could afford to be fucking nicer to people. And I'd be like why would I find meaning in something that does not have innate meaning when there are things that I can believe in that are there?
Killed the radio.
Well, and it's a problem with faith in a world where gods touch the plane is like,
but then,
like,
also are absent.
Like, one of the in this world, yes, but one of the problems I always have with D&D is it's like, well, why would you only have faith in one god if
every single
they're
one,
real? Yeah, like, yeah. If they're like functionally real, and you're like, well, I believe in Pelor, but I don't know if I, and you're like, but you just saw this like priestess of Melora grow a tree in 5 seconds, like. Everyone would just be like, oh yeah, gods are just people. You know what I mean? It would almost be a more casual relationship with faith.
Would it not make more sense to, I was going to say casual relationship with faith and or treat them as dividing lines, like countries and belief systems and whatever. So if there's multiple gods, would the fickle not treat it as ways to isolate each other?
One of the things I love about Campaign 2 of Critical Role is the way Matt Mercer segments the Dwendalian Empire by having there be faiths that you are allowed to practice in public there and faiths that you aren't. And I think that that would become more like kind of the storytelling. One of the things for Relay 1 for Felrosia, because I created the Pantheon of Gods for that, and the important thing for me was that the Hellspark, the like person who ruled over the undead, was a neutral god, because I feel like they always make the like Hades is like the evil god. And it's like, fine, like death is the most neutral thing that exists. Why is this god always inherently negative? No, the god that brings people back from the dead in like a dark way, like that is,
it's what you do,
that's evil, right? But like the person who just watches over the dead is like the most boring god in existence. They just watch eternity of the souls of the, you know, people who aren't heroes.
I really like, I mean, obviously I'm gonna mention the Silmarillion here, but I
what
like Mando.
Sorry, what's the Silmarillion?
Yeah. It's the Lord of the Rings extended.
Oh, sorry.
Basically,
the extended editions.
The pre-story.
It's the prequels. Oh, so it's like the like Anakin story.
But the point being, like the way that Tolkien wrote Mandos, the god of the dead, essentially. But the Mandos is the oath keeper, is the god of not just the wayward spirits of the elves, but also the one who like
Do you even like Lord of the Rings?
Whenever like somebody,
I'm calling Don and telling him that you forgot this.
He's like he like issues the doom of the gods. He says this is the thing. He's the reason the elves can't return to Valinor because they were doomed by their actions. And Mandos warned them at one point. He came to them. And he said, "If you keep going, you will not be allowed back." And he enforces. It's this whole idea about in Lord of the Rings, oaths are so important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you swear an oath, it is binding. The whole story of the Silmarillion is based on that idea of Fëanor swears this oath, and all of his children are bound to it. They cannot break it.
Is this relevant because you're a paladin with an oath?
Well, kind of, I guess.
Can you fix it for 100
What does this have to do with Ban and Leyland?
But the point being that, like, it's like the idea of, like, this is also the god of the dead in so many ways in this world, but it has so many more... It's very neutral, and it's very much like there's a power that gives speed to these oaths, strength to them, that they cannot just be broken or cast aside. Mm-hmm. Or if they are, an entire army becomes locked in the mountains and are ghosts because they broke an oath.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is going to be so interesting with you eventually, but we can't talk about that now.
The ghosts?
No, oaths.
So I kind of just... Harvest came about because we talked about the moons.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, there's three of us. Sorry. You just like pick a different moon. And I was like, what's something that, because I was like, oh, I don't want to, if you're doing like a god that has relationship to the moon and then you're doing like the sorcerer that has relationship to the moon, like what is there in D&D that's also like linked to the moon somehow? And I was like, well, the obvious answer is a werewolf.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
And we've been talking about werewolves a lot in D&D because I bought that set of dice. Yeah.
Yeah, the werewolf set of dice. And I was like...
From MissMountGaming.com.
I was like,
use code NerdNightly15 to get 50% off your order.
I was like, it'd be fun if she was like a redhead and it was like kind of more like brighter and it wasn't just like this like dark, scary thing. And we were just driving in the car and I was like, oh yeah. Like if I was like linked to a certain moon and I just like the harvest moon popped into my head and I was like, oh, what if her name was Harvest? Like that just literally like, I was like, oh, I kind of love that. I'm just gonna take that and run with it. And I'm the kind of person that for my characters, it can take a lot of time, not a lot of time, but it definitely takes some time at the beginning of a campaign to figure out who they are because I have a hard time like plotting out what that means without any circumstances, but then having the game play out and making those decisions in the game, I learn more about who she is by the actions of like of doing and responding. And so Harvest has kind of been inspired by, if you watch The Expanse, by the character of Amos, who's like morality just kind of means something different.
Incredible performance by Wes Chafin.
Oh yeah, incredible.
If you've never seen The Expanse, it's one of the greatest TV shows ever.
I watched the first two and I just stopped randomly for no reason.
When you get to season 3 and season 5 stuff is some of the best writing for television I've ever watched.
Mm,
yeah.
Like we have one more episode in season 5 and it's just masterful stuff on a level that you're like, how is this on like cable? Like this, it's not even like it ended up on Prime Video after season 3, but like sci-fi produced season 3, which to me, I was like, this is a joke network. We talked about it in our reaction. I was like, it's a sci-fi show. Like, oh my God. And then at the, like halfway through season 2, I think this might be the greatest sci-fi series I've ever watched.
Yeah, you love it. Yeah. And so, so she was kind of inspired by that character and from a place of like, me as a person have a very strong sense of like right and wrong.
What?
Yeah, I know. Shocking, I know. But that's something that I've always had, and I think I like to try and play something in each of my characters that is, like, almost a direct opposite of who I am. And so that's kind of, that's like the like core of her. That's like the nugget. Mm-hmm. That, and then everything else is just going to kind of expand from that.
It's going to expanse.
Expand. It's going to expand from that.
So then that was our main three. We had our black moon with Harvest, white moon for Bannon, red moon for Caligaro. The original idea of the show is that we would have three people plus a guest at all times, because we wanted to have like a diverse cast of people come through. That obviously stopped pretty quickly once Teller kind of fit into the team. I think the mistake that we made, not that it's a mistake, because I'm very grateful that you're here, but if you're going to have guests on your show, don't introduce them until like session 5.
Yeah.
Because I think the problem with our thing is that either Teller has to die, or
which was the original
stay.
Call.
Well, no, we discussed yeah. you having a Boromir moment, and like we were like, oh well, he'll just get killed off and Boromir the group. So but I think that by introducing you, obviously we did the preludes, but they were so short individually.
Yeah. Yeah.
By introducing you in session 1, it's hard to like extricate you from the launch of
we
this.
Just clicked.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
it just worked.
Yeah,
and also that. Yeah, I mean, incredibly grateful in a way that only Teller could put into words. But yeah, it was.
He tells some fucking story about it.
Some fucking stupid ass story. But yeah, no. And then so Teller, you know, to go back slightly, is interesting for me because I, thinking I was going to be a guest for like 3 sessions, I was like, I'm going to bring in someone whose whole point is to bring the party together and set them off on this journey. So I was like, all right. Like, all this, like, essentially retired adventurer who, like, wrote everyone's stories, and their whole thing is essentially interviewing people. So it's like, session 1, I sat everyone down. I was like, tell me about yourself. What is going on? Like, tell me your backstory.
And then
why
fascinating.
Like fascinating. All that jazz. And Teller was originally an old character years ago that I made for a campaign that eventually stopped, but I kind of just adapted everything about them to this, and to go into personal shit. So the first time in the original campaign, I was in a crazy dark place. I had just come off of like a real breakdown, real big one, and this was the first character that I was playing back in this, you know, this new setting. And I brought them, and they were exactly the same, had the same backstory, same story, and they were so depressed all the time. And then, when we were talking, I was like, I think I want to bring back Teller. But then, when I started playing, because we've actually had this conversation where I have said, I don't make a backstory until, like, session 5. Because then you know the character, you know how they fit into the world. I feel like you can write as much as you possibly want, but you will not know how they work until you're with everyone and start playing, which is exactly what you were just saying.
Yeah.
And I was lucky because I'd already played Teller, but then when I sat down, I was like, you know what? Teller's actually going to be crazy positive. The same person, but years have passed, and now they've like gotten over a lot of their shit, and their outlook is way different. Mm-hmm. And I walked home after my first session, and I was telling my best friend, I was just talking to them about this whole thing. I was like, it's crazy to me how I have seen my outlook on life shift from then when I was like, everything is dark and fucking sucks to now when I'm like, that did suck, but now the outlook is way more positive. So when it comes to bringing shit to characters, I'm a huge advocate for it. A lot of characters that I play, I always ask, like, why this guy now? Like, why are they being played now? And then a lot of times, if I don't think of that afterwards, I'm like, that's why I was interested in that person and that story now. And I think, you know, first guest spot is a huge like opportunity for me. I was like, oh my god, it's an in-studio game, and I haven't played
studio.
It looks better on camera than it does in person.
But like, I haven't played.
There's adjustable
like, in
weights right there.
In so long, and I felt like it was like this big moment for me. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to take that bit of my life that fucking sucked, and I'm going to bring them in and make it like a way more positive outlook. And yeah, and that was my idea for Teller, is they were either going to like die, and I was going to let that part of me go, but then it just didn't. And we were like, hey, what if actually we keep telling stories?
You might still die. Like, let's be
very much so.
Any of us have a very good chance right now.
you guys came up with this plan.
I have not seen
some
found
of us are
yet.
Less likely to die than others.
Yeah.
Tell us just nowhere to be seen at the beginning of next.
Tell us like, just
he got on a horse. He's out.
Throw me a scroll of Misty Step.
I don't have Misty Step. If I had Misty Step, I would have used it.
So that basically, we still want to have guests. So the plan. We are actively working...
Building a bigger table.
On... Well,
we have the table.
We have the table. The problem is we have to... We are currently stretching... the cameras get to the edge of the curtains that are these backdrops we use for Relay 1 and that we are using now. So we are building... We're in the process of building a set so that we can have the bigger table on camera and that we can have more people. So the goal is eventually to be able to accommodate 3 people on either table, do 6 players... for like our Candela Obscura show in April, where it's going to be 4 players because we already have that lined up. But the goal is to eventually get this Dragonlance campaign up to be able to have 6 people. I don't think we'll have 6 people every week.
No, that'll be more of an occasional thing. But
yeah. To be able to have people join these 4 and tell this story in Kryn on the continent of Ancelon as we kind of figure out what's going on with this invading army. One of the things I'm excited for. Now that you know about the invasion and the scope of it, not really. You know about the scope of the invasion here.
We know
right?
it exists.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I really loved about the backstories that you chose and that really informed the world for me was you being a Sylvanesti elf. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, because the book, so one of the weird things about the module, and I'm not trying, I don't want people to think that I'm just criticizing the module. I'm just saying this is an element of the module that I, as a GM, am trying to work through, is that it lays out the war against this invasion force has been waging for the past few years, but it also wants the players to start out relatively unaware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough. That's tough for me because this is a world with magical sending and other ways of communication. Yeah. And so, especially once you were a Sylvanesti elf whose father is in the government of Sylvanesti, Sylvanesti fell a year ago. Like, the idea that you wouldn't have heard from your very magical father in the year since, or someone that you knew in the magical order of magicians that you're a part of.
Master senders. Like,
right. And like, you guys still don't know the scope of it. There's a lot of secrets. And some of them are from the module, some of them are mine that I'm very excited about. But building that out has been a weird part of the module of this, in that I don't know how to keep some of those secrets because it feels weird that the world would be that according to the book, 2 whole nations have fallen nobody knows. It's like a huge secret, but also you're in a magical order that spans the whole world. Like those are the things that I was like, well, I'm just going to have to be like, you know that this happened.
Yeah.
Your father told you, he sent you a spell. Yeah. He's in your country. You know that this happened because the people in your country have taken in all these refugees. Yeah. And we're just going to move forward being like, we don't really know who attacked them because it was this weird army of monsters,
and it adds so much stakes because you're like, there was clear communication until then.
Yeah.
There is nothing now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is stopping the magic? What is stopping the people? Are they all underground somewhere kidnapped? What's going on?
Yeah.
So you're adding this element of like, there was that communication and now it's gone.
Yeah.
So that's scary.
Well, you know where your father is. Your father's in Qualinesti.
I know he's in Qualinesti,
But you haven't heard from him.
There's
much.
This absence, right? Yeah. And I know there's this fucking scroll in my backpack. And,
you've met this guy who is connected to a god.
The chosen of the gods.
Yeah, wild.
Who I thought was insane because he's like, I'm the chosen one. I'm like, you're
we were like,
idiot.
Sure. Yeah.
He's like, heals an entire pub full of people. Yeah. And like, I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, you know, you shouldn't be so quick to cast judgments, as Bannon would say.
I only cast spells.
I mean,
oh!
That's what elves do, though. They just cast judgment.
That's the high elf Sylvanesti side of me coming out, being like, you're lesser than me.
But that's also a big thing that informed my decision to make a smaller backstory. I was like, well, I can't know these things because we hadn't come across this yet at the time.
Because if all of you were aware of the war, it's like, well, then why are you like, then why are you doing this, right?
Yeah.
Like,
it plays into the optimism that you do have. Yes, you want to do better, you want to do all these things, and you're optimistic about the view of the world, but you're also ignorant as fuck, which, like, ties into it because you're
I wouldn't say ignorant. I would say it's naivety, right? It's, like, being so full of wonder at just the world because you're so used to this world in a small
ignorance sense. In the sense, not the stubbornness, but the lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
You have no experience. So, yeah, I guess naivety is the polite ignorance.
That led to a really, really nice scene, I guess, last week. 2 weeks ago from when this airs, but with the prisoner of this sort of like stubbornness of this one character who's like, I've seen the world sucks, I'm in it for myself because that's the only thing I can do.
Yeah. The average adult.
Who with his naivety is sort of like, no, but you're wrong.
Yeah.
And in many ways, Ben, I mean, I'll say this because I'm playing Bannon, but like, I'm like, Ben's right. Like, being a good person is always worth it, no matter what.
Yeah.
And that's Ban's perspective. That is morally.
I think everybody in this room agrees with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. In the real world.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
In our game, we might play, you know, a torturer.
But this is also very true in the real world. People get jaded, and they don't care as much about things that maybe they should care for, or they just don't have the time
focus
to...
Focus on the negative. They forget the day-to-day positives, right?
So in a way, it's really, really nice to play into this part of, like, you know, knowing everything doesn't make you a better person. Being smart doesn't make you a better person.
It's the choice.
It's choosing to care about people that makes you a good person. Yeah. And
Well, that's what I'm excited with Harvest, is, like, this character who has this very muted ability to make her own choices because she doesn't have great role models... being so alone, and what does that care? How does that character respond to being part of a group now that Caligero's maybe a bad influence a little bit?
he rolls with it too much sometimes. He's an enabler. He is.
Which is also interesting. But you know, I think like what impact are Teller and Bannon going to have on you as you're in the process of discovering yourself?
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to watch play out. I'm excited, honestly. This whole campaign is the beginning of it has been more fun than I thought. I was a little bit worried with the module that because I've only done homebrew before, I was worried that I was going to get too hung up on the fact that this isn't mine, and that that would be an impotence on my enjoyment, right? Mm-hmm. And that hasn't been the case. I think that like the dynamic that you guys bring together has really made this such a pleasure. And I'm just so excited every week for Saturdays. Like, I'm sad that we're not doing it.
Truly.
The day that this drops, like, I'm sad we don't have a session.
I know.
We had a panel that we wanted to do at this con and we didn't get it in March, and I'm like, well, okay, we'll be here and we'll play Dungeons & Dragons on the internet with our friends, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, our weekends are going to be filled with this, which is awesome, but it's just weird. It's weird how much this already means to me and how much fun I'm having. I, you know, like, there's things for you. I'm going to send you a whole document about the Mages of High Sorcery.
Please, yeah.
So that you have like that whole structure, because that's stuff that isn't in the module, which I understand why, because it's a lot of work, but you're a Knight of Salamia. What is that? What is that? Like, what's the structure of that? Who do you respond to? Why are you a Knight of Salamia in an adventuring party? Like, I'm working on coming up with like the rules for you so that you know. Because Becklin kind of gave you shit last week.
Yeah.
And I realized, like, she gave you shit, but you don't know what the rules are, really. So I'm working on that for you. I'm working on Mages of High Sorcery for you. Like, there's stuff like that I want to...
And there's guarantee... Yes, all of Selvanesi was destroyed, but Qualinesi took in a lot of refugees and survivors. Mm-hmm. So as far as expanding backstory and involving us in the world, it's like, well, who do I know that might still be alive?
Yeah.
Are there other influential
Father's
alive. My father's alive. Were there professors that got out? Were there love interests that got... Like, we don't know yet, right?
Yeah,
so there's so much to add. We need to do another call. Like,
And I think that work is going to keep on going.
Yeah, I love
but
that.
But I also don't want you guys to share everything with each other, because I think that...
Mm-hmm. No, just you.
I want you guys to reveal stuff in-game. Like, I think it's fun... watching you guys reveal stuff in game. Today, I think, or last week for the audience, the way you brought up your scars and the stone like that, I think that story was beautiful, and I thought you told it really well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
I'm excited.
I had fun with that.
I'm having a great time.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't want to keep you guys all night, though. I need to drive you home. I'm not taking you today. Right?
I'm taking this one.
So,
sorry.
We do have to go, unfortunately. But this was a blast. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait for 2 weeks from now when we're back together, unless you're coming for the Super Bowl. But
we are coming for the Super Bowl.
Hell yeah.
Are we?
Yeah, yeah. We discussed this, didn't we?
There's going to be so many. I think that we're underestimating how many people are going to be here.
There's not going to be that many.
Yeah, because the 10th we're doing the event, and then we're going to be here.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining us for this little chat. We're going to do these periodically and keep up with each other about how the campaign's going. We'll probably talk a little bit more about the campaign in the future.
So drop questions in the chat. And you know what? If you're a member of the Patreon as well, I think maybe what we can do is make a post. Be like, if you have any questions, like, drop them here so that we can keep track of that post.
Right.
Yep. I think that that makes sense. Questions for also the players?
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, you can go directly to Rob Russo Music on YouTube and just ask me questions there, out of context.
But make sure you click that like button.
There you go.
You have to, like
on any music videos I have, they're just like, so why Cal?
go watch I Could Have Been on Broadway, or what's it called?
I Could Have Been on Broadway. Yeah, Broadway's in brackets, but yeah. It's,
no, I would have
I would have been. It's not even Broadway. Could, it's a would.
It yeah. Yeah, yeah, could have is a stretch, but would have is definitely not true.
Which is the point of the whole thing.
You know what? Wow. Thing. You are such a bully.
Take the stretch.
I'm the DM. That's my professional job.
Professional bully.
Professional bully. Mm-hmm. Anyway, if you like this video, like, subscribe to the channel. If you don't, hit the dislike button. Leave me in comments down below, because the algorithm god, she's hungry. We must feed her. That algorithm god is my wife, who needs to be fed, because it's dinner time.
Yeah.
Are we going out?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. If you want to follow us around the internet, you can. I'm at Nerdy Nightly.
Rob Russo Music.
The Brian Kling.
Clarus Polaris.
Captain Crail.
That's all of us. Our links are all down below if you're watching the video, or in the description of the podcast feed. If you are watching this, please consider just like going to Apple Podcasts and pressing join this channel so that you download this every week, and then just press mark is played. It'll disappear off your phone, but then we get the play and it makes mm-hmm. our podcast look better. Give a 5-star review. Help us out. We're trying to grow this thing. Because it's expensive. And
as someone who gets like one new subscriber on YouTube a week, you don't know how much that means. Like you impact our lives so much when mm-hmm. you take the 30 seconds to go to that platform and do that thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that sounds silly, but like beyond financial support, I know there's like charity events and like all these things like that too. Even mm-hmm. the time of that 30 seconds, mm-hmm. it changes your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, all this talk about
thank you to those troopers that do that.
All this talk about being a good person and doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's the right
thing. Go like and subscribe.
Wow, yeah. Hey, you're also a fine person if you don't like I don't want to put totally too much emotional pressure on you.
We're not
just
evil.
Do it.
No, we're just very thankful to those who do. That's
we'll
all.
We'll be back
that's
next all. Saturday at 1 p.m. EST. As always, for Dragonlance, Shadow of the Dragon Queen Session 5, we will eventually have a title for the show once they decide what it is.
Queer as Carps.
Yeah, as always. Carps.
Phil.
Are we singing with Queer as
we're
Carps?
Not, we're not, we're not
I don't feel like that captures the vibe, and no. I don't know how to make a shirt of that. I want merchandising, okay?
That's a good point. We'll think about it.
Do something during night, y'all.
Bye.
See ya.